And this morning, we welcome National Center for Appropriate Technologies Executive Director Steve Thompson. Good morning, Steve.
Good, very morning. How are you gentlemen today?
Well, it's, I'm better now that you called me a gentleman. That's a first in 2021.
There's got to be some gentleman out there. There's got to be.
Yeah, well, thanks.
Well, catch us up a little bit, Steve. You know, you Climate Smart Glacier Country's founder and former board chair. And now, what are you doing?
Now, I have moved to Butte, America, probably about almost 2.5 years ago now. And so it's been that long since I visited with you. It was probably soon before I left that I was in your old studio. I haven't even been to your new studio yet. Congratulations on that.
Well, thank you.
So I moved to Butte, and I am the executive director of a national organization that's been around, based in Butte, America, Butte, Montana, since 1976. And we're a national organization with offices around the world. We're a nonprofit, and we focus on supporting local solutions with what we call appropriate technologies. And a lot of it is in agriculture, sustainable agriculture. We provide technical assistance to small, diversified farms, medium-sized farms, real focus on sustainability and soil health and diversified markets. We're also very involved on the energy side and primarily provide technical assistance and in-depth audits for energy efficiency. And we're working on renewable energy projects such as solar, and we help people at the local level. We're not so much focused on the big scale utility grade type of renewable energy projects, but more community level or household level.
Steve, I'm
fascinated. That's what I'm doing now.
Yeah, it's fascinating. You know, I'm fascinated, and I always have been, since I was in sixth grade over at Hedges School in Mr. Mulholland's class, and we had this little glass bubble that had these little flag, looked like flags, and they twisted round and round when they were in the sun. And I thought, wow, what if we could arrest this technology, you know, the sun energizing, making things happen. And I've watched this over the decades. And now it looks like we're on the cusp of something really special when it comes to solar.
Yeah, there is so much opportunity out there. You know, the first basic rule of making the clean energy transition is to be more efficient in our use. There's a lot of waste, a lot of wasteful use of energy, and so that's our first step is to work with local communities and households to try to reduce their energy footprint through basic things like insulation and new windows and upgraded HVAC systems. But then you say, okay, we've reduced our energy requirements just by being more efficient and spending less money, by the way. Then let's focus in on renewable energy. And the sun obviously is just the major driver of all energy. But we've been using this form of solar energy that's been stored underground for millions and millions and millions of years. So all of the fossil fuels, they call them fossil fuels for a reason, because they're used to be living animals or living plants. And over millions of years, turned into oil and coal, sequestered deep down into the ground at an incredible rate. We have taken all that stored solar energy and brought it up and burned it, and now it's in the atmosphere, and it's causing a lot of problems. And so the most efficient way to use solar energy is to use it direct rather than waiting around a few million years for all those fossil fuels to replenish themselves. Now, that's the way I like to look at it.
Wow. So how close are we to the better question is, what's the vision for solar? Are we all going to be independent solar collectors in our roofs and our homes? Are we going to do community? How are we going to handle it?
I think the simple answer to that is all of the above. So I'll just give you one example. One project that we're just in the process of negotiating the final details on with the U.S. Department of Energy. there is U.S. Department of Energy projects that there will be over 3 million acres across the United States covered by solar panels just for utility-grade solar. So that's separate from solar on your rooftop or in your backyard or even a small community solar project. Just for utility-grade solar, they're looking at 3 million acres. Well, there's not 3 million acres just sitting around waiting for some solar panels to be planted on top of it. A lot of that land is in agriculture. So here we are. We're a national organization focused on sustainable agriculture and renewable energy and clean energy solutions. And all of a sudden, we've been hearing it. There's a bit of a rub there. That are we going to displace all this great agricultural land by putting all these solar panels across it? And we're taking an approach and proposed this to Department of Energy, and they love it. And we've got a big grant from them with about 18 partners around the country to look at the co-location of agriculture and solar. And there's great examples around the world and great examples in this country. And we're going to create a national clearinghouse. We call it an agri-solar clearinghouse focused on how you can grow crops, raise livestock, grow honey and provide pollinator habitat consistent with having solar panels on land called co-location. So it's not an either-or proposition. But that gives you an idea of the magnitude that we're looking at just in the next 10 years for solar energy production. That's, you know, and plus people are putting it on their rooftops, and a lot of people are getting off the grid altogether. But the most common way is to put it on your rooftop and connect it in with the grid. And when you got excess energy, you sell it back to the company, or they call it net metering. Your electric meter actually dials backwards in most cases. Like I say, it's all of the above.
It's kind of like mileage on a speedometer, right?
Yeah.
Only we can't do that.
But, you know, think of that. You know, if you think of your electric meter outside your home, and, I mean, there's a little dial that goes, right?
Yeah.
It literally can spin backwards.
Yeah, I'm going to throw another one at you here, Steve, because years ago I went to Carbondale, Colorado, up by Aspen, and they have renewable energy scientific labs up there. And one of the things they were pushing was a combination of solar and wind. Their point is that when the wind is blowing, the sun usually isn't. And when the sun is out, the wind usually isn't blowing. And the combination of the two worked out really well. I'm looking out on the High Line, and I'm seeing hundreds and hundreds of these wind generators. Are they a part of our future, too?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the key ingredient for that, and there's some really exciting things happening in Montana, huge economic development opportunities, in how do you store that energy? Because sometimes the sun's not shining and the wind is not blowing. So what do you do then? Well, you need a big battery. And so there's a great project over near Harlowtown, Montana, over in the Upper Musselshell, called Gordon Butte Pump Storage Project. This is going to be close to a $1 billion project, and it's moving forward. And the basic idea is you take all that wind and solar energy, and you pump, when you have excess energy, you pump it uphill, pump water uphill, and you got a reservoir 1,000 feet above where you pumped it up from. And then basically that becomes a battery. So when you need the energy, then you've got a hydro dam, a hydro project, and you got a penstock and a pipeline, and you have 1,000 feet of vertical drop, and you're generating energy when you need it.
Wow.
So that's the type of innovations. And Montana is very well situated. We've got to get off the fossil fuel treadmill. And we can do it, and we can create jobs in places that need jobs. And that one's a perfect example. And we could spend half an hour talking about the green hydrogen movement that's on the cusp here in Butte.
Wow.
I'm not sure that's what we came to talk about.
I'm not
but
sure what
a lot
we did
of
either.
Things out there.
I'm taking you all over the place, Stephen. I'm thrilled to be doing it. Our guest is Steve Thompson from the National Center for Appropriate Technology. And okay, we've been all over the place here, Steve, and I was so fascinated by the opportunity to talk with you about solar and wind. But I want to also get a chance to talk with you about Montana's Climate Solutions Plan. So let's get started there.
You bet. So I was appointed by Governor Bullock, I think it was around July 2019, to serve on his Montana Climate Solutions Council. And there was over 30 of us, I think 40 if you include different people from all the different state agencies. And we had people from all walks of life, people involved in the clean energy transition, local governments, Native American tribes, oil and gas industry, Chamber of Commerce, Montana Chamber of Commerce, the labor unions. It's a great group of people. And we were charged with doing essentially two things. One is helping develop a plan for the state. I'd say three things. One is to develop a plan to reduce our fossil fuel emissions, to reduce our contribution of greenhouse gases to the atmosphere that is, frankly, driving the climate catastrophe that is on the horizon. The second thing is recognizing that the impacts of climate change are already happening, and we're seeing it in terms of more megafires, more summer days that have wildfire smoke, more drought in parts of the state, more fire out on the prairie, and more extreme weather events, windier conditions. A lot of people are experiencing more wind than they did when they were growing up, and then big floods and lots of, like in the Musselshell I was just talking about, they've had a succession of 100 to 500-year floods over the last 10 to 15 years. So how do we prepare for those type of impacts that are only going to accelerate? And then the third thing that we dealt with is, how do we position our economy and create jobs by being part of the solution, by making this clean energy transition, by anticipating and preparing for more extreme weather and climatic conditions? So we spent over a year working on that under the guidance of the governor and the governor's office, and we came up with a great plan. It was unveiled by the governor in September, we'll see what happens to it, because we got another governor now. And so we're actually in the process of developing a communications to Governor Gianforte, asking him to take up the plan and move forward with implementation.
Well, what can Flathead?
Steve,
what can we do here in the Flathead to urge this on?
Well, you know, the simple thing is, to contact Governor Gianforte and say, you know, you want to be part of the solution. We all need to be part of the solution, and ask him to take up the Governor Bullock's Climate Solutions Plan. And if he wants to make some revisions, nobody's saying that it's perfect. Use that as a starting place for developing his own plan for the state of Montana. And in particular, because I know Governor Gianforte cares very much about economic development and jobs, and this plan is focused on the jobs of the future rather than the jobs of the past.
Boy, Steve Thompson.
And Butte's a great example of that.
National Center for Appropriate Technologies, Executive Director Steve Thompson, he's referred to Butte America. Is that what you called it? Butte America.
Yeah, that's
interesting.
Calling it now.
And John said, John kind of teased us with the resiliency core. I don't know what that is, but it infers a way of bouncing back. Am I right?
It's actually, think about resilience as bouncing forward.
Ah.
So going back to the governor's climate solutions plan, one of the recommendations that we on the council submitted to the governor and had unanimous support from all members of the council, which is a very diverse council, was to create a Montana Resilience Corps, which is basically young people, have them working in communities to focus in on building a more resilient future, which includes the clean energy transition, but also dealing with whatever challenges they're facing in that community. And so a good example would be what Missoula County has done through their resilience plan is they're recognizing that they're getting a lot more wildfire smoke in the summer than they ever used to. And it's affecting people's health. And so they've developed a program, and now we're starting to do it in the Flathead and other places around the state, but it started in Missoula, to provide HEPA air filters to vulnerable people, senior citizens that are shut-ins or schools, it's particularly young children and older people that are most vulnerable to the lingering effects of weeks and weeks on end of wildfire smoke. So that's an example of what we mean by community resilience, where people are working together to understand that the way things were in the past are not the way things are now and will be in the future. And so how do we prepare for that in a way that protects our most vulnerable people? And so the concept in the governor's plan was to have resilience core members, which would be AmeriCorps, volunteers essentially, around the state to help those communities develop a plan, identify what vulnerabilities they have, identify what opportunities they have for economic development, and then when the next disaster comes, because we've had a lot of, especially in the last 10 years, a lot of natural disasters, rather than sort of bouncing back to the way things used to be, how do we bounce forward to see some opportunities and find opportunity in chaos, essentially? Hmm. And so that's the concept of this Montana Resilience Corps, and NCAT's in the process of trying to develop this concept and working through the Federal Corporation for National and Community Service to develop a new program right here in Montana that would be sort of a connective tissue, if you will, between state agencies and state partners and federal partners and tribal partners with local communities, and they'd be embedded in local communities to provide support. And a lot of the small towns around Montana are losing young people, and this is a way of bringing some young people back to communities focused on the future in a real positive way.
Okay, that's exciting, Steve. How can Flathead community members get involved?
Well, we're having conversations with a variety of people in the Flathead right now that are interested in hosting a Resilience Corps member, and they've participated in a needs assessment. So what we've just done last week, we submitted a concept paper to this federal AmeriCorps agency proposing to establish this program. So at this point, there's not any specific call to action because we've sort of done that first step of engaging a lot of different folks, including folks in the Flathead, all over the state, and thinking about, okay, what should this look like? How should it work? And who might be the host organizations, the host communities, local governments or tribes or nonprofit organizations. We'll find out in February if we're invited to submit a full proposal. And then we'll do that by April if we're invited. And ideally, we would have a program up and running by the end of the year.
Okay, well, that's exciting.
That's sort of our timeline.
We sure hope you get invited.
Yeah, yeah. And we look forward to an update, I guess, after the February date.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
All right. Steve Thompson, thank you so much. And exciting, some of the possibilities here. We'll look forward to sharing that future with you.
Well, I always enjoy talking to you guys.